My name's Mike Rowe, and this is my job.
I explore the country looking for people who aren't afraid to get dirty.
So what's the official name of the job?
We are the mucking crew.
Hard-working men and women who earn an honest living.
It's an impossible challenge. They just go too fast.
Doing the kinds of jobs that make civilized life possible for the rest of us.
So is this dirty enough for you?
There you go.
Now, get ready to get dirty.
Coming up on Dirty Jobs, down in Louisiana, if you want to make it as a crawfish picker, you got to move fast.
A little faster than I am, perhaps?
A lot faster.
But don't worry. The friendly crawfish pickers down here will let you know if you're too slow.
Something just hit me in the head. One of your funny speed pickers threw a tail at me.
And then I meet a little bug.
Holy cow, it's covered with termites. Yeah.
With a big appetite.
Well, there's the pile of little sons of guns right there. Yeah.
And their favorite entree?
I mean, they're pests. They are.
Is your house.
I just think it'd be great if this actually held us.
Ow, that was stupid.
Oh, God. Tonight's question comes from the Madel sisters, and they write, oh, heck, why even read the question? They're actually here. We'll let them ask it themselves. What is it
What's
you ladies
what
need to know?
Floyd? How's Floyd?
Floyd. This is Floyd Guillory. Where the hell did you bring me?
Middle of the Chaffalaw Swamp.
Now, normally when you get yourself stuck, you pull yourself out, right?
Well, it's a little more fun this way.
Yeah, it's hysterical, Floyd. Absolute riot. Floyd's actually doing fine. You guys remember the mud bug?
Oh,
episode?
Yeah. He was a real ball of laughs, wasn't he?
He was real serious about his business.
He actually scared me a little bit.
Well,
that
he
guy
had you
did.
There pulling the boat through the swamp when it got low. He just had you get out and pull it through.
Yeah, he sure did.
Yeah.
Well, there was a lot of stuff that aired that day, or that we shot that day that never actually made it onto the air. So would you be interested at all in seeing some footage of not Floyd, but me going to the Mudbug Crawfish Factory the next day to do stuff to the
crawfish?
Yeah,
let's have some of that.
That would fit in well. You know,
does it seem interesting
to you? It seems interesting.
It's the kind of thing.
Everything you do is interesting.
Well, with that in mind, watch this.
A while back, down in Louisiana, I met Floyd Guillory, who took us to the Atchafalaya Swamp to catch us some crawfish.
That's a crawfish pot, huh?
Well, I caught plenty of them, along with some kind of rash. But what we didn't show you was how these little crustaceans lose their suit of armor. And now, thanks to the Madel sisters, you'll know what I know.
From the crawfish, or the crawdads, or the crayfish, or the mudbugs, or whatever you want to call them, are brought to the Atchafalaya Crawfish Processing Plant. Processing, of course, is the industry term for being boiled alive, having your head pulled off.
The great state of Louisiana is the number one supplier of crawfish meat in the world. And although these little guys taste great, it takes more work than you'd think to get at the good stuff.
Well, Judith and Ron run the processing plant here. I don't know where Ron got to, but this is Judith. You guys have been at it now, what, 18 years?
18 years, yes.
Great. How do you process a crawfish?
Okay, you take this bag, put it here.
Yeah? This bag?
Yes.
Now, what am I putting this on? What is this device?
It's a washer.
All right, crawfish go in the cleaner.
In the cleaner.
Crawfish live in the muck and grime of Louisiana swamps and rivers, so a bath before the slaughter seems like a good idea.
Now you pick out all the, like the dead crawfish.
The dead ones?
Yes, those are okay.
Good.
Good.
How do you know if they're dead?
They're not moving.
Well, maybe it's just resting.
No.
A little nap in the afternoon.
No.
A little snooze in the Louisiana sun.
No.
No, they're dead, okay.
Yeah.
Dead. Like this guy doesn't look good.
That's right, that one's dead.
Dead zone.
Tossing out the dead crawfish ensures that only the freshest meat will be cooked.
Not dead. Not dead. Gonna be dead.
Fortunately, the live ones
ow.
Let you know they're still alive.
Dead. No, alive. Alive and angry. Boy, he's a big one. Look at him. They look like lobsters, don't they?
They do.
Ah, turtle. Oh, what do we do with him? Oh. Looks kind of pale. Maybe he knows what's coming.
Probably.
Once the basket's full of healthy, energetic crawfish, it's a short ride over to the 300-degree cooker that'll slow them down. It'll slow them down quite a lot, actually.
Right, are we on this one or this one? Any one, doesn't matter, right? Boiling water.
That's right.
That's
okay,
all the
down,
same result.
Down.
Down?
Yes.
I feel like we should say something.
Like what?
I don't know. They were good crawfish.
They were.
They had a good life.
They did.
They hung out in the bayou. They made friends. But their time was up. And now they're going on to a greater reward.
Exactly.
All right, guys. So long. I think word has gone out in the community that there is trouble in the pot.
The crawfish will cook for maybe 10 minutes till they reach 180 degrees. As they cook, fat from their tails foams up like a crawfish version of chicken stock, making the batch even tastier.
Here it comes.
Around the cooking vats, the crawfish aren't the only ones approaching 180 degrees.
Gets hot in here, Judith.
Yes.
Time to head for some fresh air.
After the crawfish have been steamed and dumped, they're collected over here, where ultimately they get picked.
This is the picking room, packed with a posse of professional pickers, including Judith, who seems to pop up everywhere.
All right, so I got a, this is a laundry basket, isn't it?
No.
Bushel basket?
That's a seafood basket.
A seafood basket. All right, just dump them out here?
Dump it here.
All of them?
All of them.
Seems like a lot.
It is. You gonna peel all of that?
I'm going to certainly pretend to.
Okay.
I got a lot of questions. First and foremost, how exactly do you get the meat out?
Okay. Grab the head like this and the tail, and then you break it apart.
Now,
okay.
You just threw everything away but the tail?
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
Twist it, and then you squeeze this and pull it out, but the line didn't come out, so you have to pull this out.
Why is that?
Okay? Because you don't eat it.
What is it?
Dirt mostly.
Yeah.
It's waste.
River dirt.
Waste.
Mud.
Mm-hmm.
And bad stuff.
Bad stuff, right.
It's poop, isn't it?
Exactly.
It's okay.
That's
this
okay.
is one of those shows you can say poop on.
Okay, it's poop.
We actually like it.
Poo or no poo, there's a truckload of crawfish in front of me that need to be disassembled.
This is fairly straightforward. Oh, I cut them in half, though.
That's right.
That's a mistake.
Yeah.
We can save
off.
Half of them,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
The rest is, that's
you
not even worth saving.
It, no.
Who could have thought that pulling the butt out of a crustacean could be that difficult?
Oh, man, I really butchered that one. Crap. Is there such thing as too small, Leia?
No, you peel them all.
You peel them all, big
yes.
and small. How many crawfish can your best peeler do in a day?
That little girl over there does 55 pounds in one day.
She's pretty quick.
Yeah, she's quick.
We're watching you. I think I made her blush.
I think so, too.
I hardly ever make anybody blush anymore. Something about my line of work.
The Atchafalaya plant ships out 1,200 pounds of tail meat every day. That's a lot of picking.
Ever tempting when you're here on the line just to pop one in your mouth as you go along? What's this yellow stuff?
We call it fat, but I think it's pancreas.
It's okay to eat the pancreas?
Crawfish pancreas, but not yours.
Well, not mine, no. You don't want to eat mine.
No.
I tell you, what you really want to avoid is my liver. Sure you don't want this?
You can have it.
A little bit of poo between friends. Mud bug peeler. It's a dirty job. Well, after I get the crab out of the crayfish, I come over here and say hi to Bertha. Hi, Bertha.
Hi, Mike.
How you doing?
Okay, and you?
I'm good. Look what I did. Pretty impressive.
That's nice. Very good.
You like that?
That's your first day?
It's my first day on the line. What's your job here? What do you do?
I'm a packer.
Okay. So we're in the beginning stages of the packing
this
process.
This is the first beginning step.
Okay, what do I do?
Everything the pickers pick has to be precisely weighed previous to packing.
140.
Well, hold on a minute. Let's wait. Look at that. Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
8.13.
Oh.
No, okay. The girls are bringing in everything they've been picking.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they get paid by the pound, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Bertha, let me weigh them real quick. Do you mind?
Sure.
I just want to be a part of the team here.
Of course.
This looks about like a 1-3-1 to me. 2-4-6. Bertha, this is a big one here. 3.17. 3.41.
The meat is then packed into consumer-friendly one-pound bags.
Okay.
Next, the bag is sealed up with some kind of a sealer thing.
Okay, so you're putting the crawfish in the, this is what, a vacuum pack?
Vacuum machine.
All right.
And you pull down the...
Pull it just like this? It's sucking the air out, huh?
You can let it go.
Oh, I can let it go.
You have to hear the whooshing sound.
Is that the whooshing sound there?
Yes, sir.
It sounded like a whoosh to me.
It sure did. And then it seals it.
Look at that. It's magic.
After a quick mashdown to get the most bags in a box, the meat's ready for market.
Now that's some crawfish meat you can be proud of, hanging on your local grocery shelf. Of course, it goes into a box first, and then it gets shipped. It all gets very complicated. Now, you might think that after having your guts squeezed out and your head popped off, you'd be unable to contribute in a meaningful way to polite society. Well, think again. These crawfish, or what's left of them, are in the process of being transformed into fertilizer. Soon, they'll be put into bags and spread across Louisiana farmland. A fine and noble destiny.
Coming up,
we're working.
Adventure out to an isolated island off the coast of Georgia to meet a dirty little bug.
Termites. They are disgusting.
It causes big trouble in your house.
They're all through this place, then.
Yes, it appears so.
But does good things in your backyard. Oh, it's an excellent snack, too.
Well, I'm no weatherman, but I'd put it at about, I don't know, maybe 110 degrees, something like that. We're in Georgia. We're headed over to Sapelo Island to do something with termites. That's all I know. I didn't ask a lot. But today, that's the boat that's going to get us there. It's called the Spartana, I believe. Yeah. And I don't know where Barsky is. I don't know where the camera guys are. There's Jones. His bag. So, basically, I got this little camera and I got an audio guy who doesn't want to talk to me. Going to be that kind of day.
Finally, the rest of the crew showed up. And we set out towards the mysterious Sapelo Island.
Technically, we haven't started filming yet. This is just a little behind-the-scenes something. But practically, we're working.
Our captain tells me it's a 7-mile trip to Sapelo Island. It takes about 20 minutes to get there.
Nice boat.
Thank you.
The island is owned by the state of Georgia and is home to a research facility run by the University of Georgia. The current population of the island is estimated to be less than 100 inhabitants.
Anybody know what this crap does?
No. I'm supposed to.
Many of the residents here are friendly and welcoming.
We all tell stories. Let me tell you about the story about the woman who walked away from me right in the middle of the story. It's a heartbreaker. Troy's getting some beautiful shots up there. Spanish moss hanging all over the place. Troy, how's it look?
Beautiful.
Troy seems very, very happy with his shot. I'm thrilled with that ride. It's been a big day. Planes, boats, and we're all loaded up now in the back of the truck, headed off to wherever it is we're going. My goodness, I love a good adventure, don't you?
The place we're heading is a complex of buildings housing the University of Georgia's research facility. Over the years, many of these structures have been infested with termites. But scientists here say that's not all bad, because it gives researchers and television crews a great opportunity to study these pests in a controlled environment.
Wait a minute. That is not the Ritz.
No, it's not the Ritz, but it does have a bell tower and a movie theater with lots and lots of little termites. So I figured it was probably time to slip into my official uniform and get to work.
Like everything else around here, this theater's been renovated. It's a teaching facility today. But back in the 40s, this place was an oasis, one of the only places on the island where you could escape the heat of the day, sit back in the dark, snuggle up with your sweetheart in one of these overwide seats, and watch Bogart and Bacall
up there on the big screen. Back in the 40s, Hollywood shipped the movies of the day across the country in wooden crates. What nobody knew was that there was something else in the wood besides the movies. Western termites, all the way from Hollywood. So, while you were sitting here in the dark making time with your sweetheart, watching Jane Powell and Howard Keel get it on up there, Western termites were doing their thing up in the attic, slowly chewing this building into dust. One more example of Hollywood's mindless depravity, insidious reach, and seemingly single-minded mission to slowly chew away at our foundation and erode the very moral fiber of our way of life. Jane Russell was hot.
Yeah, she was hot, actually. But up here in the attic, above the movie theater, it's even hotter. And that's where I'm heading right now, to meet Dr. Brian Forschler from the Etymology Department of the University of Georgia.
Brian?
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Pretty good. Warm enough for you?
Well, it's a dry heat.
Yeah, really.
Has it ever dipped below 100 here on the island?
Probably not in this attic too often.
Brian Forschler is a... What are you?
I'm a professor.
And your obvious field of study is termites specifically?
Quite a bit of the research we've done is on termites.
I didn't mean to interrupt your work, but I'm going to all day long because I'm very curious. And with the what I believe were the early onslaught of dehydration, my questions are going to be somewhat frenetic and
that's fine.
Not entirely connected.
Completely.
Good.
Allow me to let you use this while you follow what I'm trying to do.
Okay.
The gadget he's handing me is an infrared, or IR camera.
Yes.
It senses temperature differences in the wood.
And what I'm going to do is I'm going to squirt some cool air into some of these knockout holes or gallery points that the termites use to throw out their poo. Do you see a black line going up the beam now?
Unmistakable.
And that's delineating how far up that termite gallery goes in that board.
And you reckon this is their toilet?
Well, yeah, they call them knockout holes. If you look down here, you can see some of the small pellets. And on the ground all over in this building, you'll see these pellets.
That's termite poo?
Yeah, it's like small grains of sand. Drywood termites are like the kangaroo rats of the termite world. They get all the water that they require to exist from the food that they're feeding on and the atmosphere from the air. So they don't need freestanding water to survive. And as part of their physiology, they squeeze every single drop of water out of their feces to conserve water.
How do they go about the process of squeezing the moisture out of their poo?
Muscles in their rectum.
So they okay. So the squeezing and the moisture extraction is accomplished inside of the soft body.
Exactly.
They don't poo it out and then find a way to...
No. They keep it inside. So they're trying to conserve moisture.
Using the IR camera, I can help Professor Forschler map the pathways of the termites in the attic. And this data will help in developing new techniques for eradicating the little pest altogether. In another part of the attic, more termite damage and more termite poo.
Down here is a couple of boards. The one on the left is obviously infested. You see the piles of poo.
Right.
What's interesting about these is that they're coming out of the board from below.
That's generated by termites coming up through the board?
They're pushing the debris up from below.
The
you
debris.
See the difference in the debris. Let's call it debris.
The detritus.
Yes.
Quite.
Feces.
Okay.
Actually, we have a term for it in entomology. It's called frass.
Frass?
Yes. That's the polite way of saying insect poo.
Frass.
Frass.
And that's so the root word is ass. Word. From,
I didn't say that.
From the Latin.
Yes. I think it's Greek, actually. But
frass hole. That'd be the frass hole down there.
Those are several frass holes in that board.
Coming up, I learn when you need to kick some termite frass.
Found several other piles of frass down here.
It's time to bring out the big guns.
Wow, there are some galleries there.
Big time.
So this is the resistograph, piece of equipment that we use to look at the structural integrity of a piece of wood. It's a really handy, heavy drill that's connected to a resistance meter, and it records the resistance that the drill runs into while drilling through something. So what I've done is I've loaded the graph, which we'll see the results from the drilling in a moment. You can see that as the drill goes through, we're getting, and it's come out the other end.
It sure has. It's pointed right toward my arm.
Close enough. If we had a drop that went all the way down to the bottom, we would have run into probably a termite gallery. We don't know the extent of the infestation as far as height in this attic. Mm-hmm. And there's a cupola with a bell and a wind vane on the top. Mm-hmm. And if you would take that resistograph up there, mm-hmm. and see if you see any evidence of termites.
Uh-huh.
And if not, come back down with a resistograph reading indicating that it's the lumber sound up there.
Now, like they say,
half the fun is getting there, right?
Exactly.
The attic is usually the best place to check for termites because the wood is exposed.
Lots of nails sticking out, too. Be careful.
I just think it'd be great if this actually held us.
Yeah, I think it will. It's been holding this bell for decades.
That's exactly what I'm saying. At this point, it might be tired.
We're through.
I think these look solid.
See all these little holes right there? There. Wow, there are some galleries there.
Big time.
But that first one that you picked, there's a huge gallery right under the surface. Found several other piles of frass down here.
Well, they're definitely, they're all through this place then.
Yes, it appears so.
So based on what you learn from the survey, that'll determine what kind of construction or reconstruction he's had?
Yeah, well, basically how best to attempt to eradicate them. Short of tenting this building, we're going to try various spot treatment techniques, either through application technology to distribute that killing agent throughout the entire system, or rely on the social structure of the insects to move it about for you.
The most common method of controlling termites has been to spray massive amounts of pesticides or to tent an entire building. Dr. Forschler's research is relying on understanding their social structure so that he can implement different methods of containing the termites without having to use environmentally harmful pesticides.
Perfect start to
a long, sweaty day.
Before we can study termites in the lab, we need to catch some at this old abandoned building. We're joined here with termite researcher Sarah.
So here's an old entryway. I don't know if it's still an active doorway, but some plywood covering it that we feel is infested with termites. And so Sarah's going to use a sound amplifier, a listening device that we have.
At the end of this device is a hypodermic needle that picks up sound and vibrations, then is amplified so Sarah can listen for termites.
What I'm trying to hear is them chewing, and they make it sounds kind of like bacon crackling, you know. It's kind of this faint sort of chewy sound.
Don't anybody scream. Yeah, I do, actually.
Take a piece out of the bottom of that and see if there's any termites in there. Just got it, man. So, that's dry wood termites. See the soldier with the big head?
Yeah, that's, I knew I heard him.
You definitely did.
I knew I heard something in there. Let's see if I can break it open and find some more.
Termite.
Ow, that was stupid. See anything?
What we can do is, there we go.
Their crap is everywhere.
Yeah.
They didn't find a way to push their fascia frass.
I just like to think of it as dirt.
Yeah.
That makes it a little bit easier.
Now look at all of them. Just a pile of little sons of guns right there.
Yep. These kind of got squished a little bit, but...
Well, that'll happen when you run a crowbar through a soft-bodied animal.
That's right. But I would say that this building has a termite problem.
Would you?
I sure would.
And you would base that on something like this?
Yeah.
Termites. They are disgusting.
Now we'll take some of these dry wood termites that are hiding inside these pieces of wood back to the lab.
so we can compare them to the subterranean termites and put them together and see if they get along or if they fight.
Let's do that. Where can we get the subterranean termites?
We're going to get them from some sections of PVC pipe that we've buried in the ground around here and have been checking for years. So.
Let's go do that.
So what we want to do now is check the vices that we sank in the ground back in 1993. We've got about 80 of them buried around the island.
And what do you call them?
Call them inspection ports. Here's your tool.
Oh, and I was some termites for you.
Thank you.
It's buried somewhere in here?
Yeah, somewhere in this vicinity. Find it?
I think so, yeah.
That sounds
like something.
Yeah, so then you unearth it. Fortunately, a lot of them aren't buried like that.
So it's been in here for 15 years?
Well, the section of PVC pipe, we replaced the knockout plugs. As you'll see, some of them are in better shape than others.
Holy cow, it's covered with termites.
Yeah, we've got a fresh sandwich, so take this, pull that out.
Uh-huh.
Just grab what you can of it. It's falling apart.
The termite-infested old wood is removed and replaced by a bundle of new wood.
So,
that's the comparison.
What we have here is a before and an after. That's what the termites have been doing to this wood over the last few years.
Well, actually, the past few months.
Oh, because that's how recently these were put in?
Yeah, this was put in 3 months ago.
Oh, I see. So the
we've been checking them
on a regular basis for nearly 20 years. But
the wood has changed every 3 months.
Jam it on down in there.
I think that should do it.
Perfect. And that knockout plug should just easily fit back in there. Yeah, a little bit.
Fine.
Make it easier to find next time.
All right, take me to the lab.
All right.
You want me to carry these?
Yeah, if you don't mind.
Yeah, you can have the chisel.
Thank you.
All right. I'll follow you.
No, this
you
way.
Follow him. I'll follow her.
Mound-building termites are master architects in the world of insects. For the size and sturdiness of their building structures, no other animal or insect can compete. Australian and African mound-building termites can build their nests over 20 feet tall and about 98 feet in diameter.
Well, it's not air-conditioned, but there's a nice cross breeze. Troy has set up a special camera here, and he'll be shooting super, super tight stuff. Is that right, Troy?
That is correct.
Good luck with that. You're Wes?
I'm Wes.
Wes, great. And Bryce?
That's it.
Right, and we all know who you are.
Unfortunately.
These are students under your tutelage?
Yes.
What's your major?
Microbiology.
That makes sense. What's your major?
Exercise science.
What are you doing here? I mean, are you taking the class kind of because you figured it would be, you know, look, I'll get out of the school, I'll come to a nice island, meet some girls?
No. I mean, it's a summer job, and I love doing it.
It was exercise science, was it?
It was exercise science, that's right.
When did it become a science, just out of curiosity?
Yeah, it kind of is. You got to use science to move everything and lift weights and make sure everything's going right.
I thought it was just technique.
I mean, it is technique to a science.
Oh, I see. You've elevated the technique of working out to a science. All right. So, what do you want to do first?
First, we're gonna want to take it. You want to be able to, like, tell the difference between like actual like dirt or like termite and poo.
You call it poo?
Pretty much, yeah.
What do you?
Majority of us.
I mean, I've like called it poo, but frass is, I guess, a good
You're
scientific
right
term. I'm good with that.
All right.
Poo, dirt.
Poo, dirt. Do you think that's dirt falling off or poo?
Probably dirt.
Oh crap! Crap makes it even more complicated. New term.
Only poo in here.
Why don't you scrape everything into this pan right here? And then that way we'll take all the poo and we'll put it in the weigh boat.
It's called a weigh boat?
That white thing's called a weigh boat.
Weigh boat.
Weigh boat. Because we weigh it.
Why is it a boat?
I guess it floats. I mean, it's good to be a boat.
How do you look at that and get a boat out of it?
Do you ask me?
Exercise science.
That's what I'm saying.
Let's take one of these chisels and just bang it.
The dirt and frass are kept separate so the dirt can be tested in a different lab. Contrary to popular belief, termites are not all destructive. Their underground tunnels help to aerate the soil, and they also recycle old cellulose material.
Slapping the wood with a couple of college guys. It's been a while. It's like some sort of terrible grilled cheese sandwich. What's inside? You open it up and... Oh.
Crap.
Frass.
fresh, man. The thing was spring loaded. So that's one sandwich.
How many termites do you guys think are there?
At least 20.
At least four.
Let's do a lottery and see who gets closest to the actual number.
All right. I don't want to go first, though. Looks like the Price is Right.
The Price is Right. Let's go, Bryce.
The Price is Right.
I'll go with 856.
I'm going to go with 1,500.
Wow. One of you is going to look really smart.
I'd say there's at least 4,000 there.
2,900.
Okay.
Figuring out how many termites there are in just a small section of wood is a good indicator of how fast they can infect the structure.
They're very thin-skinned and they dry out rapidly. So we set some paper up that provides them with the moisture, plus it's all crinkled and wrinkled so that they can hide in it. And then we just pour them on and use their desire to get away from dryness and leave the dirt behind, hopefully. So as you can see, they're starting to run off, go underneath, and we want to try and provoke them to leave this dirt. It's just a lot of dirt.
After the termites are clear of the dirt, they need to be placed on the weigh boats to be weighed.
Yeah, I think you got a defective pair of tweezers. It can't be the operator.
It can't be. These forceps are flawed.
Here, try these. I bet it's going to be a lot easier.
Soldiers on the run. Oh, well, that's easy when you cut them in half, yeah.
Yeah, that slows them down for a while. And you can throw it in that weigh boat that Bryce has.
So these are all of our termites minus the dirt. It's amazing how many more there are than you think.
Yeah.
You have a way with words.
As Steve Martin said, some people have a way with words and others not have way.
Coming up, the answer to our termite population pop quiz.
Let's see, 21 plus 18.
That is if I can figure out the math.
Means 0.5.
How is the average lower than any
other? Well, that's part of the mystery of math.
I'm a science major.
You'll get to that later.
Next, we need to weigh five boats containing 10 termites each so we can determine their average weight.
So you want to put your weigh boat on the scale?
Mm-hmm.
Get everything out of there? You want to zero it out. Okay, and then you put your first group of 10 on there. 0.020. And just keep doing that until we get all five. 0.019.
Yep. 0.21.
Take the average of all those numbers. There's a calculator right there.
Oh, I don't need a calculator.
All right.
Calculator. Let's see. 21 plus 18 is 31. 41 minus 3, which is 38. Plus 21, 41, 51. Plus 19 is 91. 91 divided by 5. 5 goes into 9. Well, only the one time. The 4 left over. That means 0.55. Basically, I think it's 18.5. I should double check here.
How is the average lower than any?
Well, that's part of the mystery of math. You probably haven't studied that far yet.
I'm a science major.
You'll get to that later.
Oh, okay. I'll take your word for it. I think I'm going to use a calculator.
So conventional. Oh, you know what? I bet that was 101. That's what that was.
Yeah, it was 100.
100 even?
Yeah, 20.
Is that right? Oh, wait a minute. Is that an 18 or 19?
That's a 19.
Oh, I thought that was an 18.
You're still off by way more than that.
Yeah, but your handwriting is freaking atrocious.
I'll give you that. All right, now our total weight.
You want to be a scientist. Neatness counts, man.
I want to be a doctor.
Oh, well, then, appendix, gallbladder, whatever. Take them both out. What's this say? I don't know. Open heart, cut off a leg. Mystery. What's the 6.943?
That's all this right here. Everything.
Oh, you just weighed all those things.
I dumped all of them in there.
And this is going to tell us how many total termites are in this thing.
So we take this number of all of them total divided by our average. Total is 3,522. It was all of them.
And he guessed
4,000.
He was right. I guessed 29. What'd you guess? Do you remember?
800.
I do. 800.
Yeah.
Man, you were off by more than anybody.
Yeah, I know. I just want to know how you managed to think that this average was the right answer.
Well, I'll tell you how. That was a straight-up classic boneheaded mistake. But this simply can't. You can't look at that and say that that's not an 8.
That's a 9. What did you think that was? That was an 8 as well?
No, that I thought you had a seizure. You know what we need to do? I think, honestly, we need to talk to a phys ed major.
I think we should.
Sort this out.
Luckily, we have one right outside.
Wes, settle a discrepancy for me here. This number that's circled, what is it?
Say an 8.
Well,
touche.
And, doctor, would you concur?
Looks like an 8.
Yeah. Looks like an 8. Okay. I think I get it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of adding, subtracting, some questionable penmanship, counting, and that's how we assess the total number of subterranean termites.
Correct.
That are caught in the sandwich technique.
Yes.
But these guys, whole different deal?
Very different. And so what we'd like to do is knock some of these guys out just as a visual comparison between drywood termites and the subterranean termites.
All right.
Whoops. Sorry.
And these guys are much bigger.
Yeah. They just cut in half like a ton of them.
I just what?
Just cut a ton of them in half.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I did.
There's a soldier right here.
Tell me about the soldier. What makes him so daggone angry?
You cut like half of them in half, though.
Well, that'd be a quarter.
I guess you aren't good at math.
See the difference here?
What you got there?
It's two soldiers, different species.
Well, maybe we should let them duke it out.
What we'd like to do next is to demonstrate a marker recapture technique that we've developed.
Uh-huh.
And it's one of the ways to see who's connected to who.
That sounds awesome. Do you have any more students? I think these two are sick of me.
I could probably find a couple more.
Yeah, let's get out of here.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Good fun. Hey, help me up, would you? Thanks. Oh.
Coming up, I learned that termites' biggest fear...
It's probably the largest single mortality factor that these animals face.
Amazing. Well, it appears that those termites are holding their breath. I'm not entirely sure that's true. The doctors join me once again, and Su Yi as well. How are you?
Good.
Good.
How are you?
I'm fine. Are they holding their breath or are they dead?
They're holding their breath.
Yeah? How long can they hold their breath?
Probably about 8 hours.
8 hours?
Or more than that.
Is she making things up, doctor? Is that true?
Basically, the way they survive, when it rains and water moves through their world, they just shut down, go into a state of suspended animation, and wait for the water to move through the soil profile in a timely manner.
Mm-hmm.
That's rather amazing.
But you can drown them. The ground stays wet for over a week. It's probably the largest single mortality factor that these animals face.
Is drowning.
Drowning.
All right, well, what are we going to do? Are we going to recreate this?
Yes.
Oh, great. Oh, yeah.
This experiment helps to illustrate the termites' durability.
And so we have these that we have had. We prepared like 2 hours earlier. If you look at them now, mm-hmm. they look like they're all pretty much dead.
Yeah, they look like drowned termites.
We're in the pond.
Reanimation?
If it's going to happen. Just leave them sitting like that.
Those look like 10 drowned termites for sure.
It may take them a few minutes. We'll have to go to something else and come back to these things.
All right.
Water.
Hey, this guy's moving.
Yep.
He's coming back.
So that's 1 out of 10. That's what percent? Bryce, where are you when you need it?
Yeah.
See, they're all back alive.
Amazing. They're all back. Okay. Yeah. So will you continue test 3, 4, 8, 10 hours,
yeah,
2 days?
That's the way we did it until we got to the point where we were seeing mortality.
These termites survive for 2 hours submerged in water. They can only live for 3 or 4 days in flooded soil, proving that long periods of rain will control termite population.
Oh. Jacob has a degree from the University of Georgia in International Affairs, which I guess is kind of relevant given what we're about to do.
Yeah.
What are we about to do exactly?
We're going to see if we can fight some termites, and it should be a good match.
We hope to learn what, doctor?
They fight, they're definitely different whether the same species or not, they're different populations or different colonies.
So different populations, even within the same species, are inherently hostile to one another?
Not always. One of the reasons that makes them such a successful invasive species is they have this lack of aggression and ability to coalesce rather than form real strong territorial bounds.
Well, Jacob, if their natural propensity is to get along, how do you get them to duke it out?
Well, typically one termite will send an alarm signal, pheromone, and that'll signal the two different, if they're different, populations to fight. What we're going to do is we're going to just dump them together and see if they fight.
See what happens.
So you can grab that one. I'll grab this one.
All right.
And we'll just dump it in here. Differentiate.
Okay. So,
yeah. The first pairing will consist of big versus other big termites. If they don't fight, they're most likely from the same colony.
Can you instigate it? Give them some liquor?
The next pairing is big versus small termites.
Oh, what's that? Look at that. See it?
There you go.
He's picked him up.
There you go.
They're fighting. The big and the smalls are fighting.
Which is what we would expect.
Yeah, and the big one's just eating the small one. He's eating him. Right there.
If the termites fight, they're probably from different colonies, and the infestation can cover a bigger area.
Killed him and left him for dead. It's been a long, hot day, full of knowledge, unexpected surprises, and billions of termites. They're everywhere, aren't they?
Yeah, they're as numerous as the stars.
Now, we don't know that for sure, do we?
Yeah, it could be infinite.
Yeah. We need Bryce for that kind of math.
Yeah, I've heard about your math skills there, Mike.
Yeah. You know, it's a great time to say goodbye to you. Yeah. Good luck with the rest of your life.
Thanks.
Doctor,
same here.
It's been
Thank
a pleasure.
You very much.
I'm going to walk over here.
Okay. Bye-bye. See you later.
Research like this can help give us a better understanding of termites, how to control them with less impact on the environment while still keeping their beneficial value.
All in all, pretty good day. The research will continue there in the lab deep into the night. There is pandemonium in the petri dish even as we speak. And it's hard to believe that just 12 hours ago I was up there in the cupola in 150-degree heat learning everything I could learn about termites. I'd love to sum it all up for you, but I really can't, other than to say that if you're going to study these things, you better roll up your sleeves and get busy, because in the end, they're small. They'll kick your frass. I want to show you something. It's disgusting, but I think you can take it. This looks like beetles eating rotten potatoes. It's actually a metaphor. The beetles, you see, are your ideas, and the potato is my brain. My brain normally is empty, but with your ideas crawling all over it and infecting it, dirty jobs can stay on the air to fight another day. Discovery.com/dirty jobs. Your ideas for dirty jobs directly into my brain. Next thing you know, the two of us are together getting filthy. It's just math.
It looks clean, but when Dan turns the light off and I put the black light on it, it looks like that.
Whew.
That.
It's clean.
That is off-putting.
Maybe the most sarcastic stand-up I've ever done.
Some people have life preservers. We went with beer.
No life preservers, but we have these.